Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, musicians, and comedians that perform here and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what makes our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Don Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. I'm excited and thrilled to introduce you to Sydney Tooman Betts, a seasoned historical fiction writer. Inspired by her home near a stunning cavern system, she intricately weaves settings into her acclaimed series, The People of the Book. Sydney's diverse experiences include cross-cultural adventures across Europe and the Middle East for various missions as support, teaching from preschool to graduate level and serving in various roles within evangelical denominations. Before her writing career, she ghostwrote stories for adult literacy programs, showcasing her storytelling prowess. With themes of courage, faith, and resilience, Sydney brings a unique perspective to her novels. Welcome to the show, Sydney. It's great to have you on today.
It's great to be on.
Yes, we met years ago. We were trying to figure out, do we know what year we met at the church?
Probably about a decade ago.
Yeah.
Met each other.
Yes, and we really haven't had the opportunity before now to spend as much time together,
no, we
haven't. I have been enjoying this blessing. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And I'm so excited to get into what you do because I very much love historical fiction, and I didn't really discover that until a few years ago, and someone introduced me to World War II fiction books.
Wow.
That's a huge genre. You're in different genres that I can't wait to talk about. But
I am, but I've got a good World War II book for you.
Oh, you
do? I can tell you when we're off the mic.
Okay. And you've written 7 books, or you're on your 7th book?
Yes, I'm currently writing my 7th.
So you have 2 3 book series, correct?
That's correct.
Again, the one is The People of the Book.
Correct.
And then the second one is the main character is Phoebe,
yes,
and it's different titles.
Phoebe's Mysteries is the series title.
All right. And they both take place in 2 different historical time periods, but they're related to one another.
They are. One leads into the other, time-wise.
Okay. And the first series is centered around American Indian culture. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it takes place in the Indian territories before the states, not before the United States, but before those Indian territories were states.
Okay. Oh, this is going to be really fun stuff. I love literary works of art, and I think it takes a tremendous amount of patience, I would think, to write a lot, does it not?
It's a lot of tedium. It's a lot of work, but it's okay.
Yeah.
It satisfies the creative urge without the paintbrushes and the cleanup.
No one wants to see my cleanup after some painting. Might buy a new house. I don't know. Something will happen. What prompted you to go from ghostwriting to writing your first book, A River Too Deep?
Well, ghostwriting was just a small gig while I was in graduate school. So that was just a temporary thing to earn a little extra money, as all graduate school students need.
Yes.
And as far as the writing actual novels, I just long to have a venue to have more influence with people for Jesus, because I'm a committed Christian, and at the time I was a homeschooling mother. And I just didn't run into a lot of people. You know, I ran into people in our homeschool co-op, but they were all committed to the same Lord that I was. So I wanted to be able to share the gospel, or at least to foster, following Jesus with other people. And it was writing is a great avenue to do that.
You found that to be true for you.
I have. Just this morning, I got a note from a lady that said that my books had propelled her to delve into the Word of God more. I was very happy about that.
I bet that touched your heart.
It did, yes.
That's great. How does the choice of the American Indian culture fit in with your ministry background? Or does it?
It sort of does and sort of doesn't.
Okay.
I never ministered to any, you know, I never was involved in any Native American ministries or anything like that. But because I've had a lot of cross-cultural experiences, it's opened my heart to different people groups,
mm-hmm.
you know, not just to people that are like myself. And then, well, at the time I was homeschooling, when I first started writing, I was homeschooling, and we just happened to have a lot of units on Native American groups, different groups. And we read a book from a man, I'm sorry, called White Buffalo, actually, was his name, and he was talking about the harm that missionaries caused, some missionaries caused within the Native American community,
mm-hmm.
splitting people, you know, in tribes, dividing mm-hmm. people, which, of course, you and I know as people who follow Jesus, we know that that is just natural, mm-hmm. that light and darkness, there is a division. When you bring in light, there's a natural divide between light and darkness. But he also discussed different ways in which early missionaries, instead of embracing the culture of the mm-hmm. people they were ministering to, they tried to make them over into their own culture. For example, it was becoming a good Christian was also becoming a good farmer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which we, of course, okay. know, you know, they have nothing to do with one another.
Yeah.
So from a point of view of the 1800s, missionary who's been raised on the farm and hard work on the farm,
mm-hmm.
and that's what it is to be productive, it might have seemed like some other lifestyles were less diligent or something. It's not true.
Right.
But
yeah.
So there's that overlayment of, which is what it stirred my interest in what would it have been like had missionaries gone to Native American groups and embraced their culture, not the sin elements of their culture. Every element, every culture has sin elements,
mm-hmm.
not any of the sin elements, but just the cultural elements. You know, there's mm-hmm. nothing, there is no culture that's superior to another
no.
culture.
And we all share in humanity. Yeah, we're all human, yeah.
Exactly. And so why do I need to become like another culture, you know, lose my mm-hmm, culture mm-hmm. and adopt another culture just to be a Christian? You don't. That's definitely not a requirement mm-hmm. of the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you found that really fascinating. And I know from our earlier discussions and getting ready for this podcast, you were sharing that there, what we may think is pretty violent is a way of life for them historically.
Yes. One's culture does shape one's actions.
Right.
And one's religious belief shapes one's mm-hmm. actions. And the Native American cultures that I wrote into my books, the Native American cultures or the indigenous peoples from America, they're vastly different from one from another. Mm-hmm. Vastly different. So it's not really accurate to peg Native American culture one way or the other. But the particular tribes that I was interested in writing about, they had a belief that if you mutilated your enemy mm. after you killed him, that it kept him from being able to fight you in the afterlife.
Yeah, yeah. That's so fascinating. Yeah.
The afterlife was just a continuation of the same thing you did in this life. So, you know, you hunted, you fought your enemies, etc. So if you cut off your enemy's legs, he couldn't stand up and fight you.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah.
Or other body parts.
Right. Yeah, certainly not. And then the scalping too,
mm-hmm.
if I remember right.
That was capturing the soul.
Right.
The soul was supposed to be.
I had no idea.
No, I didn't either. And I don't know that that's true in every Native American tribe, but the soul was inherent in the hair. That
Okay.
I know that it sounds odd to us.
That was the belief.
That was the belief.
Or is perhaps still currently the belief.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't either.
So if you take the because the only Native Americans I studied were from the era that I was writing about.
Gotcha.
But if you capture the person's hair, you capture their soul. So they can't rise up against you if you've already got them in your, you know.
In your hands.
Yeah.
You've cut their hair or whatever.
Yes, exactly.
How did you go about studying all these different American Indian tribes? How did you get and gather all that information?
Initially, I used the internet to search for whatever I could. But I came across a wonderful source that is 119 volumes by Edward C. Curtis. And he's a man, he was a photographer. But in addition to being a photographer, he would go to different Native American tribes after the Great Indian Wars, when most of them were on reservations. And he would ask some questions about their youth. Because at that time, it seems like a long time ago to us, but there were people still alive that, you know, had like a 60-year-old man. You know, I'm in my 60s, and I can certainly remember what all my youth was like and what I did and what my customs were and everything.
Right.
And so he received the information from the actual people, so firsthand. Which I love. I love the idea of going to firsthand sources. And he wrote extremely thorough notes on. I think it was 119 tribes. It's a 119 volume set. I know that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Available in the libraries. And
I don't know if you can get them through the library.
Okay.
It's Northwestern University has them all online.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So you can access
them. You can access on Google and find out the information online.
That's correct, yes. Edward C. Curtis.
Okay. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
I bet you there's some laughers out there that will look that up, which is exciting. I love when people can cross-cultural and information, too, and share that and find out about something they may not normally look up or have forgot about. Oh, yeah, I wanted to learn more about the American Indians. So this sounds like a great way to learn about that. Now, you chose a couple of different specific tribes for your People of the Book series. Can you talk about, in more detail, the time period that you chose and the tribes that you chose and why?
Okay. I chose the Plains Indians. Now, the actual tribes I chose were the Sioux and the Crow, but I didn't use the word Sioux and Crow to name them because those are names that their enemies labeled them.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, it would be like calling an Italian person a pejorative word or a black person a pejorative word. And I wasn't going to label a people group by a pejorative label. The time period I chose, I wanted to write more than one book, and I wanted there to be enough time to avoid the Great Indian Wars, to be honest. There has been so much, this is not a politically correct thing to say, I'm sure, but there's been so much the white man did me wrong. And that's certainly not the point of my books.
And you don't want people to get focused over in that direction and away from the storyline.
Right.
Okay.
And the white man did do a lot wrong.
Yep.
But that wasn't what it was about.
That's okay. That makes total sense to me. And then a couple of those books out of that first series, the scenes or even chapters were inspired by where you live. Can you talk about that?
Well, I went to see it. We didn't live in the Shenandoah Valley at the time that I was writing the first two books. But by the time I was considering this plot of the second book, we visited a close friend of ours that lived here in the Shenandoah Valley, and she took me to Grand Caverns. And I was very impressed with it, and it stayed with me, and it inspired some of the scenes.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Are they taking place inside or outside the cave, or both?
Both. But the second and the third book in that series, both have a lot of scenes within the cave.
I'm looking forward to reading more of her books. I asked her which one I should start with. And maybe that's not the same answer for everyone, so you can ask the author yourself. But I'm starting with the first Phoebe's book and the Phoebe Mysteries. And so I'm making some headway, and I'm really enjoying it a lot.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
And that's a different time period.
It is. It takes place on the tail end of the other series, mm-hmm. because I wanted to segue. There's a character in the first series who is, shall we say, supporting cast. Actually, mm-hmm. there's about five characters that are supporting cast. They're all white, and they interacted with the Native American tribes that were the real focus and the real stars of the first of the three, you know, the first series, the three books of the first series. And so I decided to take the supporting cast in those books and then play out their lives.
Mm.
So once the one series was over, I segued into the next series, time-wise. I mean, literally, in my time, in my lifetime. But also, that's what happened as far as the, you know, chronological time period.
Yeah.
So there's a crossover of characters. And that also was a... That's like hiding Easter eggs in your book. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it was a kind of a little surprise for my readers, because I have some very loyal readers, and I knew they'd enjoy reading more about the characters that they'd already become familiar with in the other books.
And it's like they're going into new life chapters, mm-hmm. and so there's new discoveries and joys and disappointments.
Right. So although A River Too Deep, the first book in the first series, starts out in 1817, Phoebe's Mysteries start out in 41 or 42.
Okay. So that's just like 30-some.
Yes, mm-hmm. exactly. And so you can kind of see where both cultures were at the time also.
Oh, that's neat. I'm looking forward to that. Really am. I like the layers. I also have always wanted to write a book myself.
Good.
Yes, but I think in my case, my book is going to be called People of the Popcorn because of this absurdly flavorful popcorn from our sponsor, Preposterous. When you think about this popcorn, you got the cheddar. Isn't it amazing?
Mm-hmm. Cheddar is my favorite.
Cheddar is your favorite? Mm-hmm. I like cheddar too. I'm always, when I go pick up popcorn for our podcast guests, I'm always picking up extra cheddar popcorn for myself. And I love it. Laughers, this popcorn is Shenandoah Valley's only award-winning popcorn. Their kernels are grown right here in the valley, and their factory is 100% nut-free. They also just won the Virginia's Finest trademark, or got designated with that, which means it's among Virginia's top crafted specialty foods.
That's amazing.
Yes, and it's hard to get that trademark from what I understand. So, laughers, let me tell you something. I have great news for you, because this popcorn for laughers, you can get 15% off using promo code LAUGH15. Just visit prepopsterous.com. That's PrePopsterous.com. You can order some today, have it shipped to your door, and then you can munch on it when you join me on next week's episode. But I want to get back into this author life of yours, and I want to ask you what your writing process is like. I think you were telling me you're a little bit of a slow writer.
I am a slow writer.
Okay.
Slow and thorough.
Yes, I think that's good. So talk to us, where do you draw your ideas from for comics? You know, we have notebooks and... Right. Word documents, and people do different things. I have a notes app on my phone. If I get an idea, I'm jotting it down in there. What do authors do?
Well, I don't know that I can speak for all authors.
Okay, what do you do?
An inspiration just hits me. Now, I know some authors that are prolific, and I know some authors that It's called writing to trade. I'm not sure I have the right word there. But they write what sells.
Mm.
That's just not me. I write what fascinates me.
Okay.
And I think it comes across in my writing that, you know, I care about the subject matter. And all sorts of things inspire me. For example, not my current book, but the book before that was inspired by watching a TV show and hearing a certain clue and thinking the clue was going to bounce a certain way.
Oh.
And I thought, oh, that's fascinating. It didn't bounce that way at all, but I picked that up and used it as the seminal clue that solves the mystery.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah, the third Phoebe book.
Just from watching a show.
Yes. Well, then you have to build the mystery around that.
I know. It's like we have to build the jokes.
I understand.
Yeah.
Really, being a comic is being a writer.
It is, mm-hmm. in a different kind of way.
It is.
Yeah. So you do that, and when that happens, right, mm-hmm. you see that idea on the TV, are you storing it back here and say, oh, I'll write it down when I get to a notebook, or you have something near you all the time where I'm going to write it down now?
A lot of writers, ones that are more prolific than I am, write those things down. I just store it in my brain and think about it. You know, I cook it for a while in the back of my head.
Imprint it on here. Mm-hmm. Okay. I love that. More prolific fires. Well, I think she's pretty darn good. And we're going to talk about more on your insights on your first book, A River Too Deep. There is a character in there, and it's Alcee Callan.
Mm-hmm.
And this seems to be about a world of treachery and deceit. Is that?
Yes. She gets thrown into a world of treachery and mm-hmm. deceit, which, of course, as a writer, you have to, if you're going to have your character do something vastly unusual, like mm-hmm. become part of a Native American tribe, she has to have a motivation.
Mm.
You know, people don't normally make those drastic kind of changes in their everyday life.
That's right.
So she was escaping something.
Okay.
Which propelled her into a different part of her life.
Okay. And your books, too, have some central themes. This River Too Deep theme seems to be mostly about loss, love, and faithfulness.
That's the tagline.
Okay.
It is, there is loss in the book, and yeah. there's love, and there's faithfulness.
Life, people.
Yeah. it's really about following Jesus.
Oh, okay.
It's about taking Jesus seriously and doing what he says. You know, as you know, a lot of people, there are a vast assortment of people who call themselves Christians. And a lot of them, they kind of see Jesus as their co-pilot, you know, mm-hmm. to use an old cliche, an old bumper sticker, where the Christian life is about augmenting their life here in this world and mm-hmm. making their life here in this world good.
Mm-hmm.
My books are about people who take the Word of God seriously and employ the Word of God and follow it, even if it propels them to make hard choices.
Mm-hmm.
For example, one of the choices in A River Too Deep, the seminal choice for the protagonist, was she going to follow the example of the Good Samaritan
mm-hmm.
or just let someone lay there and die because mm-hmm. He was her enemy?
Mm-hmm.
And that is the catalyst for the plot.
I see. Wow. And I guess if these characters are American Indian mm-hmm. and Christian, then there must be some stories about meeting missionaries, I imagine.
Alcee was the catalyst for...
Okay.
She I don't want to give away the whole plot.
Well, we won't, laughers.
But circumstances threw her into the Native American tribe.
Okay.
And out of just trying to be faithful day by day mm-hmm. to what the Word of God said, it had an effect on her and had an effect on the people around us, just like it does in our lives. Just a different setting.
Yeah. And a different time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then you have the next book that came out just a couple of months later.
It may have been published recently a couple of months later, but it was about 2 years in between.
Okay. Okay. So you had two kind of in the hopper, so to speak.
So to speak.
Okay. And then A Lightbird Song is a continuation.
It is. It's about Alcee's daughter.
Ah, okay. So what do you feel comfortable revealing about that? Maybe some things that are on the book cover.
Well, that was inspired. You and I were talking about inspirations for books earlier.
Yeah.
And that was inspired by a story I read in Voice of the Martyrs, where a young woman who was committed to following Jesus was basically forced into a marriage that she didn't want in a different religion. And that got me thinking. At first, my reaction was like, oh, how devastating. That would be horrible. And that got me thinking about marriage in general and how applying the unique things that God's word brings into marriage, applying that even in the situation where your husband is your enemy, how God's word works, you know, and how that would react. Now, doing the right thing and treating other people the way Jesus would doesn't necessarily guarantee that the person we're treating well responds well, but then sometimes it does.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to explore those possibilities.
And do they play out in different ways where it's more a positive outcome and then other times it's not so much a positive outcome?
Yes. And not just for the individuals, but for the entire tribes. Because you affect, you know, a tribe is a smaller group of people. It's not like saying all the people in Harrisonburg, our nearest larger town. It's a small group of people. You know, maybe, I don't know how many would be in an average tribe. In the heyday of the Plains Indians, a large tribe might be like 200, 300 people.
Okay.
But if you affect one person, that
you're affecting the whole tribe.
Exactly. And that's both positive and negative.
Smaller communities. Yeah. So you would. That makes perfect sense. Do you have any challenges that you come across as you're developing these different characters, as you're writing them, when you're transitioning from A River Too Deep to Lightbird Song?
The characters just pour out of you.
Okay.
The challenge, I find life is challenging.
And I find that too, laughers.
So I tend to, if you really want to know a secret, if you read my books, especially if you read them in the progression they're written in, they're kind of, every author leaks out her own life.
Really?
Oh, sure. Sure, because you write about what you know.
You know.
So and well,
yeah. You're going to know the feelings attached with that, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So some of the things that are expressed in A River Too Deep reflect my own marriage. Some of the things written in Lightbird Song reflect my own marriage. Less so with Straight Flies the Arrow or the Phoebe's Mysteries, who are whodunits, but the Phoebe's Mysteries and Straight Flies the Arrow do reflect what I'm learning at the time, and, you know, different, just the life lessons that the Lord's teaching you in any given moment, because they apply to all people at all time periods.
Is that, how does that feel when you go back and read life lessons that you had epiphanies about in book one, and then you see a shift and a growth in you or new perspective in book number three? What does that feel like?
Oh, that's quite a question.
I know.
And I'm not sure how to answer that.
You remember it, or you look forward to reading the epiphany, or what's that process like?
The problem is that when you're reading, when you're going back and reading your own works, you're always hypercritical, at least I am. You see all the flaws.
Right.
The ones that other people would probably just skim over.
Not even notice.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. Flaws on many different levels, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, you find a punctuation error.
Right.
Or a typo or something that you wish you could have read better.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard. Crafting a story, you want to have a certain effect on your audience.
Mm-hmm.
It's, but that effect takes place with discovery and surprise. And you cannot, if you've written the book, you don't have that same discovery and surprise because you know where it's going.
Right.
I don't know if that answers your question, Dawn.
It was a deep question. But I get it. I'm curious because as joke writers, a really good joke, you'd love to hear it again.
Okay.
Right? And so there'll be a certain comedian out there, it'll be a favorite joke of his or hers or theirs, and you know that only that person can tell it.
Right.
And so when you start hearing the first few words, you know that joke is coming. And I mean, myself personally, I'm like, yes! I'm going to tell that joke again.
The most similar thing I can voice with that in writing is that you love your characters. This may sound crazy or like I'm crazy.
Maybe we're all a little crazy laughers.
But after I...
Grace is good.
Yeah, for sure. After I conclude one of my stories, I often mourn for the characters because I want to be with them again.
Really?
Yes, they become like your family. You know, writing is a very solitary activity. And so your characters become very real. As we talked once before, often characters leak out that often people you know leak out in your characters and people that you love or people that you don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people the that enemies. Hopefully you love them, but hope you know, sometimes there are people that have been unkind to you.
Very challenging.
Yes. Like I have a character talks with bitterness who
really?
Definitely reflects someone in my life. I'm not gonna say who, someone that had lived in my life. She's no longer living. But you just mourn because they're unlike seeing a person. Mm-hmm. Like if I start missing you, I can call you up or text you and I can see you again. You can't go back and visit your characters. So especially that's tough, especially when you end a series. But sometimes you just know when it's done. It's just done. You have nothing else to write in it.
And it's time to publish it.
Yes. Not just to publish the book, but to finish the series.
Mm.
Not to just continue. To continue on would just be to repeating the same thing over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you decide, let me back up for a second. Did you know that The People of the Book was going to be a 3-book series when you started? Okay.
No, it started out as a 1-book series. Well, not a series at all.
One book and done, laughers. Yes. That's all you get out of Sydney.
But while I was writing, the first book, actually while I was editing the first book, I added some chapters to the first book.
Mm-hmm.
And between them and the story that I just related about the Voice of the Martyrs magazine, the story I read about the woman being forced into a marriage she didn't want. Because I knew that was inherent in Native American culture, at least the tribes I was reading about and researching, you know, that just sparked the interest to do another book.
Okay. Yeah. And then when you wrote book number 2, did you say, oh, that's it? And
yes. Then I didn't think there'd be a book number 3 at all. But once I finished book number 3, that really was it.
Okay. And then you're done. Did you know that you were going to go into Phoebe's Mysteries at that point? Or was that a revelation after time of finishing People of the Book?
I wanted to continue writing, but I didn't want to continue frankly, I have a lot of readers that would love for me to continue the Native American series.
They would.
If I did anything in that regard and I thought about it, I would go back and do a prequel. instead of continuing on because it really is, it's done. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all finished. But I wanted to continue writing, and my two favorite genres are historical romance mm-hmm. and also mysteries, the whodunit type of mysteries. You know, there are many different kinds of mysteries. There's edge of your seat suspense. There's mm-hmm. like police drama, mm-hmm. CIA. Yeah. Those just don't interest me very much, but I love whodunits.
The whodunits. Yeah. Where did your passion for the whodunits begin?
Probably with Agatha Christie. She inspired me.
Queen.
Yes, I think I've read everything she ever wrote.
Yeah.
And I just love it because you can, unlike historical romance, mm-hmm. for one thing, you can pick it up and put it down. Mm-hmm. I know that sounds like an odd thing to aspire to as an author, but especially as a mother of young children, I've lost too many hours of sleep that I badly needed, you know, to take care of my kids the next day reading, you know, historical romance. And you just, it gets you at a more gut level,
mm-hmm.
whereas a whodunit is more like a puzzle you're solving. Hopefully, if I've written my characters well, and that's for the reader to decide, not me, and my plots well, the reader is compelled to discover who done it
mm-hmm.
and also is intrigued by the characters and likes the characters and wants to, in a sense, live more with the characters.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the edge of your seat, you know, is this heroine going to have this horrible thing happen?
Mm-hmm. You know? Wow. What is the toughest part or most challenging part of writing a whodunit?
Oh, I don't know if it's whodunit in particular, but the hardest part of writing in general mm-hmm. is just to sit down and get yourself
that simple.
Writing. Oh, yes, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, it's because it's fear of the blank page.
Mm.
You know, you've got the writing is kind of like trying to have a baby when there's nothing in your womb.
That is very dramatic analogy. I like it, though.
It's like you're trying to pull something out of nothing, out of nowhere.
Ah, yeah.
So it's full of self-doubt. Mm. And, you know, it's just hard to get going sometimes. I've broken this promise, but I did make myself a promise at one time, which was really helpful, and I've given this advice to many writers or would-be writers. Make yourself a promise to write for 15 minutes a day,
mm-hmm.
because 15 minutes is not daunting.
Mm-hmm.
And once you start, it's like exercising, really.
Mm-hmm.
If you make yourself a promise to exercise for 5 minutes a day, chances are you're going to exercise for, 15, mm-hmm. half an hour, whatever. It's the same thing.
It's making it a habit.
Yeah.
I encourage the same thing in comedy.
Is it?
Yeah. Okay. During the pandemic, Joel Byers from Hot Breath Comedy, I know personally, he's been on some of our shows, and he would do a write 10 session online, and a bunch of comics would tune in and write 10. We did that for months and months and months.
Write 10, you mean 10 minutes?
Write
10 jokes?
Minutes a day. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so he would set the timer, and we'd write 10 minutes, and it was really great. I got some really great material out of that.
Wonderful.
It's developed since then, but yeah, I did get some really great material out of that.
Are you familiar with Nate Berkus?
No. Should
You've
I be?
Never my gosh.
What am I missing, laughers? What am I missing, Sydney?
Nate Berkus by far, and I'm probably saying Berkus wrong.
Okay.
Because it's an unusual name.
Okay, Berkus.
Yeah. It's not Berkis. It's something really strange, and we probably are not saying it right.
That's all
but
right.
He's so funny.
He's a comedian. Funny.
He's by far and away our favorite. By our and Michael's and mine.
Well, I will have to look you up,
it's
Nate.
Probably more Nate Berget or something.
Oh,
well,
Nate
like
Bargatze.
Yes, there we go.
So sorry about that, Nate. That. But you know, you need to do something about your last name and take out a few letters or something. That's all I'm saying.
I just said it the way we say it at home.
But despite that, Nate, I still have tickets for my husband and my son to the May 12th show.
Oh, that's great.
In North Carolina. So
you are familiar with them.
I am familiar with them. You still can take out a few letters out of your last name. That's all I'm saying.
I love it because he's
great.
Hilarious. His timing is wonderful.
Ah,
and he's clean.
Yeah, he's
fantastic.
He doesn't fantastic.
Have to resort to the lowest common denominator to make people laugh.
No, he's sharp. It's storyteller, too. I appreciate his storyteller a lot.
Bargatze?
Yeah. So I think it's actually pronounced, maybe somebody from your team, Nate, can help us out and put the hyphens in the right places in the comments, but I think it's Bargatze. Yeah,
okay.
Bargatze.
Okay.
I botched it up, I'm sure, Nate. Sorry about that. I still think you're the king. It's
not
all
as
good.
As Nate Berkus. So.
Yeah, he's really great. We're really looking forward to that show. One of my favorite bits of his is the Mount Rainier bit. And if you have not seen the Mount Rainier bit and you have not heard about the dead horse, I highly recommend.
I've heard about the dead horse.
It's so good. I can't get enough of it. Yeah. Did you see him in person? Not yet.
No.
Okay. We said not yet. See, I'm going to talk her into going soon too, Nate. You can still take a couple letters out of your last name. All right. We're moving on. All right. We want to talk about the Phoebe's Mysteries a little bit more. This Phoebe character comes from the earlier or lineage from an earlier storyline.
She becomes friends.
Friends.
With people from the earlier storyline.
Okay.
I wanted to have someone, I started her off at, she was either 15 or 16. I wanted someone to grow old with, in a sense. I used to tell people that, and it may still be true, that either she's going to die first or I am. But I wanted to give her a plentiful long life.
Yeah.
So she could become my sleuth, so to speak, through the whole series.
I am curious because I'm reading it right now. She is a teenager as I'm meeting her.
She is.
Is she forward in life by book three?
Yes.
Okay.
I would say... probably half a year each book. It's not rapid. Maybe.
Okay. So we're not going to our 30s and then our 80s.
Right.
We will
eventually. Either she'll die first or I will, like I said.
I love that.
There are underlying themes. There's a romance that's developing more.
I see that.
Book number four. Well, okay.
Okay.
I'm not going to make any comment on
I was actually really trying to dig in there. Did you see that? I was trying to get something. Anyway, I tried. Go ahead. Please continue.
I've tried to make her romantic life realistic.
Okay.
And probably reflective of my own, which maybe is not realistic. Well, I had one of my beta readers say, like, this girl she lacks confidence, you know? What does she have to do? Get hit over the head to realize this guy likes her? And I was just making her like me, and I was definitely like that. You know,
he didn't know.
Totally clueless. If a guy was interested in me, I'd be very clueless.
Oh, you didn't know. What's a beta reader?
It's your second group of readers. You have your alpha readers and your beta readers.
Does every author have alpha and beta readers? This is a...
I can't say for sure, but that's common.
That's common.
It is common. Because you don't see the holes in your writing.
Too close to the work.
Yeah, too close to the work.
Right.
And, you know, everybody's different. You know, I have a certain personality. You have a certain personality.
Indeed, I do.
Yeah. Like, I'll read books that I'm like, that would never happen. You know, that conflict to me seems so unrealistic. But then maybe it did. Like, I said that about to another author about a third author's book that I liked her writing, but to me the conflict just seemed silly, trumped up. And then she revealed to me it was about the author's own life. So it happened in real life. So apparently I just need to make adjustments in my expectations. But, you get
it's all good. It happens.
You pick a few trusted people that will give you feedback, honest feedback.
Yeah. Okay. So it's not this whole small group of 10 or 20 people, typically.
That's up to the author. It could be. I've had more and I've had fewer. I have whittled down my group to, because it also slows things down. Mm-hmm. You get feedback from your alpha reader, and then you change things appropriately if they need to be changed. And it helps also. It helps thicken the plot sometimes.
Yeah.
But I want people that are going to be critical of me. Not of me, but of my writing. Mm. And kindly so. I have a wonderful friend her name is Nancy, if she ever listens to this.
I hope you do, Nancy. Hello, Nancy.
But she has the sweetest way of saying, I'm not sure this is realistic, or I'm not sure I would react that way. Or it seems to me that if I were in that circumstance, I'd be much more upset than Phoebe is. That kind of thing.
That's good feedback.
It is good feedback.
And when you get good feedback like that as a writer, do you look specifically at that place where they make the comment and then see where you can rewrite and punch it up or make it stronger and that kind of thing? That's what we do.
100%
what you do. Feedback from other comics.
Okay.
Yeah, same thing.
Yeah.
If you can punch it up here and word economy and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So your first group is called your alpha readers, and then you have a second group that goes over it. And then, it goes on down the line till it's a finished product.
Yeah. Okay. And in your whodunit, we have a lot of twists and turns, and we know you love it. How do you come up with all these twists and turns? How does that work?
I don't know. I plot it out before. Some people, they're in writing, you call them pantsers and plotters.
I'm sorry. Let's repeat that again. Pantsers?
Mm-hmm. Pantsers, which means flying by the seat of your pants.
Ah.
That they just write and they just let the story take them wherever it leads.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are plotters that plot it out ahead of time. I'm sort of in a combination of both. I write myself a loose outline because I want to know where I'm heading.
Mm.
Kind of like a road map, but I don't know all the stops along the way.
Yeah.
So I'll fill out a rough outline, and that's where I'm intending to go. And sometimes, for example, I mentioned earlier that there's the culmination of a romance in book 4 of Phoebe's Secret. Who I didn't expect. The person just stepped up and was like, it's got to be me. Yes, the character did. Yeah. It just couldn't be anyone else.
It just made sense. It clicked in.
Yes, it made sense.
Like a fitting in a puzzle piece.
Exactly.
Click.
Because everything's progressive. Especially if you're writing a series, your plots... I despise, actually, series that are cliffhangers.
Oh, yeah. Where they don't tell you anything that happened. It's for you to determine.
Well, no, I don't mean
not
that.
Oh, those. Okay.
I don't like those either because I like closure. But
I prefer it. Yeah.
Yes. In some series, they write where the story just cuts off. And you are forced to buy the second book. If you want to know how things turn out, kind of like if you remember, I'm sure you were alive during the 80s, and there was a TV show called Dallas.
Yes.
And the Who Shot JR.
Yes. That was a big, big deal.
Right.
Millennials. Big deal.
There are a lot of writers that write that kind of series. I won't even buy that kind of series. If I find out that a book is that kind of series, I won't buy it. And even if I want to find out the answer out of principle, I won't buy the next book. Because to me, it's like holding a gun to your reader's head, meaning that you have to. But the kind of series I write and that I like is that there are background stories that feed into the other one, that they're not the main, they're not the focus.
Mm-hmm.
But they still, you know, people's lives change.
Mm-hmm.
Phoebe starts out as a, I think she's a 16-year-old. She might be 15. It's terrible that I can't remember, but
after, I mean, we're on book 7. I'm going to give you a lot of grace. Yeah.
Well, she has to grow up.
Right.
You know, and things happen as you're growing up. Your life changes. Your friend's life changes. Mm-hmm. Different people come into their lives. Different people come into your lives.
Mm-hmm.
You're changed by the circumstance of the mysteries that you've been involved in.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an undercurrent that goes throughout the first four anyway, Phoebe's mysteries. I don't know how long I'll continue that, of the Underground Railroad.
Oh, that would be so fascinating.
It's kind of a secret. You'll discover it.
I can't wait, actually.
Yeah,
I really am enjoying it.
I'm glad.
Yeah, I've just been wire to wire the last couple of days. I was kind of like, oh, I wanted to read more of that book. But I will get to, and I'm looking forward to it. It's so fun. I've discovered that you do this. I kind of knew, oh, I want to say 3 or 4 years ago that you were an author, but I hadn't really checked it out. Now I'm really checking it out because of this podcast, and it feels like an exciting find to me.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I'm delighted.
Yeah, me too. It's really fun.
And my writing's not for everyone.
No, this is a great segue into my next question. Your writing has been described, in fact, as edgy. A little edgy.
You know, that's all context, too, though.
Okay.
Because I write primarily Christian fiction. Well, I actually only write Christian fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And the Christian fiction community, like any community, is a wide gamut of people.
Mm-hmm.
You have people that only want to read Amish fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have people that read much more edgy things. My books would not be considered edgy in the secular mystery field, nor would they be considered edgy in the historical romance field.
Mm-hmm.
But Christian historical romance or Christian whodunits mine are a little bit edgy.
Yeah, that is so fascinating. We all do have points of view and perspectives,
right,
and parameters and that kind of thing. We'll have similar issues and spectrum of what clean comedy is or isn't, and what is clean comedy to one person may not be the exact same definition for another person.
That's exactly right.
So
mine probably deal maybe with some deeper issues.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Christian fiction, some Christian fiction's wonderful. I don't mean to put down Christian fiction at all. I wouldn't write it if I didn't like it.
Yeah.
But some Christian fiction is more predictable.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want predictable because I don't like to read predictable. So I don't want to write predictable.
Yeah. Right. But I want a prediction right now. And when do we get to read the 7th book?
Oh, I have no idea.
Oh, I asked a big question. Yeah.
I'm probably about halfway through writing.
Okay. We got some idea where we're at. All right.
And the summer is always, I teach ESL during the school year. So I'm much more limited in my time.
Mm-hmm.
So.
How long have you been teaching ESL? We didn't talk about that yet today.
About 5 years.
Okay.
Yeah, this is my 5th year.
Did you think you would be teaching it that long?
Never. I never thought I'd be teaching it at all.
Surprise,
Laffers. It just fell into my
lap. It did?
Yeah.
Did somebody just say, oh, Sydney, you know what you would be great at? Teaching ESL.
I just answered a want ed because I wanted, you know, I have an educational background.
All
background in teaching, teaching, specifically teaching reading.
Yeah.
But I've, you know, I homeschool my children. I let my certification lapse. I didn't think there was any way that I would get back into teaching, especially the schools seem very stressful nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that I think I would want to do even as a sub.
Mm-hmm.
And I answered an ad for teaching ESL that the description just seemed appealing to me, and I ended up loving it. It has all the elements of teaching. I used to teach first grade, of teaching first grade that I loved without any of the, you know, more negative
consequences or factors. Yeah, yeah, that's a good word. Let's use factors.
Okay. I like that. It's not as stressful. For one thing, I teach adults, and the adults that come to my class, they're there because they want to be there.
Mm-hmm. They want to know.
They're because they're being forced to be there by their parents or the school system or anything else.
Mm-hmm. And they're young and they're figuring life out. Yeah. We get older and we're still figuring life out. Yep. There's a theme there, laughers. But this has been so much fun. I would love if we can just wrap up with how can the laughers follow Sydney Tooman Betts, the author? How can they get their books from you? Where are we going to get those?
All my books are available on Amazon, whether someone wants print copies or whether someone wants ebooks. Mm-hmm. They're all available. The best way to follow me really has dwindled down to my Facebook page, mainly because of time constraints.
Mm-hmm.
So I have two Facebook pages. One is Sydney Tooman Betts. The other one is just Sydney Betts. Mm-hmm. Sydney Betts is my personal page. And formerly, I would urge readers to go to my author page, Sydney Tooman Betts. But because of some changes that Facebook has made, it's more difficult to reach a wider audience of my readers through my professional page than it is through my personal page.
Interesting.
So just go to my personal page.
Okay. And authors do interact with you on Facebook.
Oh,
I remember you talking to
authors
me about
and
that.
Readers.
And she and this author will actually ask what you think about different cover arts and things like that too.
Oh yeah, I definitely with my friends and with my readers, who often my readers become friends.
Mm-hmm.
Because when someone's writing you and telling you how a story affected them, it just invites a relationship.
Yeah.
And I have one reader in particular who has become a really close friend. I've never met her.
That's great. But so it's all been on Facebook?
Yes. We all write private messages, but we write back and forth about some of the secrets that we wouldn't maybe talk about to other people.
Yeah.
You know, things that there's in the anonymity aids in talking about some of the deeper things. For example, well, I'm not going to go into an example. things that you can't really discuss with a lot of people, you know, because it's too private or it would affect somebody else's reputation.
Yeah.
You know, I can discuss with her. She's committed to the same goals I am, committed to the same Lord I am, and she'll give me her input, and I'll give her my input on her situation.
Yeah.
So, and if you're out there listening to this, Dawn,
aww.
I really appreciate you. Aww. A different Dawn.
I have a good friend, Dawn, too. I call her the other Dawn.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that's great. I love Dawn. Now you have two Dawns love. That's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Sydney. This has been super delightful chatting with you about all things Phoebe's mysteries and people of the book.
My pleasure.
Yes, and the seventh book to come. I can't wait to hear about that. I love that you spent time today sharing your storytelling talents with us and with the laughers. Thanks again for coming on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you bet. It was so much fun. And laughers, to learn more about Sydney and her books, please go to her Facebook page at Sydney Betts, and you can follow her there. I think we had a lot of fun today, laughers. And I'm going to say, when you have fun on the Virginia's for Laughers podcast, the only thing that makes sense after this is to like this video, share, and subscribe. What do you think?
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, me too. And also, do not forget that discount on Prepopsterous Gourmet Popcorn. Visit prepopsterous.com, use promo code LAUGH15, get a 15% discount, and then join me on next week's episode with your munchies. And lastly, and most importantly, thanks for tuning in, laughers. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us, and we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to an X2 Comedy show or let us bring one to you. To find out more, head to x2comedy.com. Be sure to share this podcast with a friend, and until next time, cheers.